Good afternoon. This is Linda Carlson. I'm your host for Wellness Watch. We're recording here for WGXC 90.7 on your dial. Wellness Watch is a monthly program, first Monday of every month at 3 o'clock. And what we try to do here is provide our listeners with information about chronic disease. We've been spending some time in the past talking about diabetes. Last week's program was around obesity and what's happening in the United States to try to deal with this epidemic. And today, I'm going to use a headline here from an article I found online. Today, the headline is, "Unnecessary Trips to Hospital ER Cost $4.4 Billion, a Study Finds." So I have with me, again, Jerry Blair. She's a licensed practical nurse living locally and working locally. Jerry was so kind to be a guest on a previous program to talk about self-care and diabetes. So today she's going to try to give us some insight around, when do I go to the emergency room? When do I use an urgent care, or can I wait until I can get into my physician's office? So welcome, Jerry.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be back.
Great. So before we, before I ask you some questions, some very candid questions here, I did want to read this study. It was done by the RAND Corporation. The dateline is September 7th, 2010. So the study, the article is written by Andrew Nuska, and he begins, he says, "We all know that some folks rush to their local hospital's emergency room for things that are, well, less than an emergency. But how often does that happen, and how much is it costing us? About 17% of visits to the ER in the U.S. could be treated elsewhere at retail medical clinics or urgent care centers, according to a new RAND Corporation study. The savings, if that occurred, about $4.4 billion, yes, with a B. Most of us are aware of the idiosyncrasies of the healthcare system in the United States, and that there's not enough space for," he talks about in his blog, "to post detail about them all. But his major point is as follows. There's a shortage of doctors in the U.S. and not enough hours in the day to see patients. So when a condition arises, some folks skip the limited hours and long lead time for appointments and head to the ER." Jerry and I were talking before the show here, and she has some thoughts about what else is driving people to this urgent type of care. So the problem is that for some of these trips, the ER is no place to go. There are still significant wait times, so much for the emergency, and worse, it will cost a small fortune for both the patient and taxpayers at large. What two social scientists suggest in the study is that patients ought to consider seeking out retail clinics. And these are clinics that are located in pharmacies or grocery stores. Now, I don't think I've seen any of those locally in Columbia or Greene County.
But I hear they're coming.
Oh, good, good. And they're usually staffed by nurse practitioners who can handle urinary tract infections or sore throats. Actually, I do know one large insurance company that has a program with a focus around diabetes, and pharmacists are doing a lot of education mm-hmm. and managing of pre-diabetics in the pharmacy setting. So the urgent care centers, they're usually staffed by physicians, so they can handle more serious conditions such as minor fractures and serious cuts. Both facilities tend to be open in the evenings and on weekends and can handle surprise visits. Better still, they're substantially cheaper than the ER. So in the study, researchers analyzed information about patients who visited retail medical clinics and urgent care centers and compared it to profiles of patients who visited hospital emergency rooms in 2006. What they found is that 13.7% of the ER visits in the survey could have been treated at a retail medical clinic from an injury point of view. The figure drops to 8% if you restrict those to those when retail clinics are typically open. And then researchers found that an additional 13.4% of all hospital ER visits could be treated at an urgent care center. Again, the figure drops to 9% if urgent care center hours are taken into consideration. But overall, that means that 27.1% of all hospital ER visits could have instead been managed at a retail clinic or urgent care center. When taking office hours into consideration, 16.8% of ER visits could have been rerouted to an alternative facility. So one caveat about the study's findings, it did not evaluate whether retail clinics and urgent care centers currently have the capacity to handle substantially higher numbers of patients. So, Jerry, I know that, again, you and I were talking about the when to go to an emergency room or use one of these alternatives. And what's your advice for people? How would they start thinking about where do I go?
First and foremost, I don't want to send the message that you shouldn't go anywhere, mm-hmm. that you should handle your own medical problems on your own, because right. that's absolutely not what we want you to do. The very first place I would start is to call your doctor's office. Even if you think it's a serious medical condition, if your doctor's office will be able to tell you, yes, I have an emergency appointment, mm-hmm. or no, I think that's something that you should go to the emergency room for. Or if they don't have an emergent appointment, they can direct you to a local urgent care center. Mm-hmm. Now, if the medical emergency that you feel you're having is chest pains or signs of a stroke, things like that, that's something that you should probably call 911 and have mm-hmm. the EMS crew come in and take a look at you and then transport you to a hospital. That's the safest thing to do.
Great. And my understanding is that our EMS, our emergency medical services, have really been upgraded here in Columbia and Greene County over the past few years, right?
They have. There are more ambulance crews and there are actual paramedics that are coming out based on the information you give the 911 operator. So, you know, a paramedic will be available and dispatched to your location along with an ambulance crew.
Great. So what I just heard you say was it depends on the information you're giving 911. So you have this terrible crushing chest pain and there's anxiety and, oh, my God, I'm going to die. But at least if you're alone, you know, try to take that deep breath and
right.
be very clear about how you're specifically, clear and specific about how you're feeling.
Exactly.
Because that will guide the response.
That will get you the best appropriate care.
Great.
You know, if you are, and it's really important that you are able to describe the pain you're feeling mm-hmm. Or, you know, things that have happened. If you've fallen and you've hit your head, it will be really important for you to be able to describe as best as you can what you're feeling and what you're going through and what happened.
Right.
And then they will send the appropriate care for you, whether it be a paramedic or just an ambulance crew to transport you. And an ambulance crew, those are EMS personnel, and they are capable of handling emergencies. You know, they have
IVs,
basic,
they can start an IV.
Exactly.
Hook you up to an EKG. And,
right.
Yeah, great.
Basic life support systems, yes.
Great. Great. Well, so that's good news for Columbia and Greene County.
Mm-hmm.
So the final message is just be very clear. Give them as much information as you can.
Correct.
Great. Okay. So I think we've clarified that for our listeners. The caveat is that, you know, if you're really feeling that this is a very total emergency, and I think most people would understand what that feels like and mm-hmm. make the appropriate choice. Call 911.
Right. But beyond that, I would start with your doctor's office.
Okay.
Give them a call. Most of them have emergent appointments throughout the day. A lot of doctor's offices are employing PAs or physician's assistants now
mm-hmm.
To handle emergency appointments if they have the time available. Or they will direct you to a local urgent care system.
Great. Okay. So, and you work in an urgent care
I
system.
Do.
So What types of visits do you see that possibly could have been triaged back to the physician office, or maybe they could have waited? Something that comes to my mind would be people who are showing up with asthma attacks. And being a nurse, I'm thinking, gee, you know, I know a little bit about asthma, that you've got, it's a chronic condition. Your physician, your pulmonologist, if you have one, a specialist for lung care, that you would have routine medications to take to reduce the effects of exposure to triggers, but also rescue inhalers. So if people followed their plan of care that the physician laid out for them, we might not see as many of these visits.
We might not. Most of the asthma visits that we see are children, and it's brought on by a trigger, which could most of the time be avoided, but sometimes you just can't.
Okay.
Especially if it's triggered by seasonal allergies, and I mean, you can't live in a plastic bubble.
Right.
So we do see, you know, emergent appointments where they've used their inhalers, they've used their nebulizer treatments, and they're still having a problem.
Okay. So that's appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So these people have done everything. They followed their plan of care. They followed their their list of what to do before you actually move on to an emergency kind of setting. So I think the message here is that, you know, when you are parents of children, you know, pay attention. You might have to nag a bit.
Right.
I think, you know, kids, they want to...
Kids don't want to do their homework. They certainly don't want to take their inhalers.
Well, correct. That's right. And also, I think this peer pressure, you know, they don't want to appear to be a wuss, if you will. Yeah, but, actually, I just used the word wuss, and I think that came from you from earlier conversation, talking about, in your opinion, what do you think is maybe driving some of this this want to, where people seeking out urgent care, you know, not just going to an urgent care center, but it's, I have to have this done urgently now.
Right. Well, I was reading an article online, and it was called, it was written by an ER physician, and it was called The Wussification of America. And it's this need for instant solutions, and the fact that we live in an instant gratification society now, where you wake up with a sore throat and you want it gone by 2 o'clock. You want an antibiotic and you want it gone. You don't want to have to deal with it. And having woken up with a sore throat myself, I agree with that. But, you know, we have to give our bodies a chance to fend off whatever it is that's come on. It may be a sore throat because there was a cold breeze last night, or, you know, or maybe you're not drinking enough fluid. Maybe your throat is dry and that's why it's sore. To rush to an urgent care or your doctor or an emergency room for an antibiotic for symptoms that have only been, that you've only had for a couple of hours is really not the smartest thing. And there's a lot of times when, you know, the sore throat or the runny nose or the coughing for, you know, a day or so doesn't mean that you need an antibiotic. And then we get into, is it bacterial or is it viral? And antibiotics only work on something that is bacterial. It doesn't work on viral illnesses. And it actually it can prolong your symptoms. And it can actually render that antibiotic ineffective for you in the future.
Well, actually, that's another whole program around antibiotics. Pharmaceutical companies are not doing research for new antibiotics. There are so many resistant strains, and they really cannot come up with that next generation. There are people dying in hospitals from infection because none of the antibiotics can treat it. So
I'll look forward to that show.
I think we should maybe make it an hour and have a whole panel there. One thing that came to my mind, being a nurse, and I have my own very good health insurance, which I'm very grateful for and lucky. And I know that my health insurance, my card on the back, I have a 1-800 number, and I can call that number and I can connect live with a nurse on the phone.
A lot of insurance companies are moving to that now to help reduce the cost of unnecessary urgent care visit, but also unnecessary emergency room visits.
Right. So they can triage. They'll ask me some questions, and you know, I'm sure that they're guided by a clinical team, mm-hmm. And help us make better decisions about, gee, can I handle this at home?
Right.
One thing I know, being nurses, we tend to say, well, I'll take care of this myself. First of all, right. I don't want to spend the money. I'd rather buy a case of wine or something.
We are the worst patients.
But I have a great book, and it's called, Prescription for Nutritional Healing. And that's a really good self-help book. But again, the caveat always, even on your antihistamine bottles, if your symptoms persist longer than 48 hours, then, contact
right.
a physician.
Right. And I think that needs to be the bigger message. Give your body a chance to fight things off. Give your body, your immune system, a chance to do its job.
Right.
By taking antibiotics too soon or for an unnecessary condition, you're suppressing your immune system. So you're actually doing harm to yourself.
Actually, there are some physicians who are of the mindset now that instead of treating a fever with aspirin, bringing the fever down, that the chemicals, they're called cytokines, that are released from fever, mm-hmm. that they are part of the immune fighting system.
Exactly.
So that if you can tolerate a temperature 101.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, it depends, age, baby, adult,
exactly.
old person. But you still might get well sooner than, treating all these symptoms. I think you were alluding to that about the body.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. A fever is your body fighting off something, a low-grade fever, I should say. But sustained fevers over, I believe it's over 101 that, is making you really uncomfortable, then you should probably seek medical advice.
Great, great. Now, I also have, I found online, and God bless the internet, another thing for people, there's so much out there, and one would think, gee, with all that information, and people are out looking, I would have thought maybe we would have seen some pullback in these visits, but I think what you're saying is that, okay, I know that, I read that, but darn, it didn't tell me, how to get better now.
Right. Actually, I've seen, and just talking with patients, they're going on the internet and they're, doing these symptom checkers, mm-hmm. and things like that. And they're coming in with, well, I think I have, ABC disease, and I want to be tested for that. And well, the internet can be a wonderful thing, and it is a wonderful thing, but it can also be a scary thing. And if you're not interpreting the information correctly, you tend to overreact.
Actually, I've had experience with people like that. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've checked this out. I'm on a new medicine. And you should know the side effects. But people will go way out and they'll find the 0.001% side
exactly.
effect. And it's like, oh, am I going to get cancer from this? Or,
right.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Now, one of the another controversy, we're bringing up a lot of controversial topics here for future programs. There's another article I found. It's called Bending the Curve, 12 Ways Health Reform Will Tackle Runaway Costs. And this is by Ann Kim and David Kendall. And they have 12 ways, but I chose four here that are really relevant to our discussion today. And one of the facets of the reform is to move people from emergency rooms to routine care. So their numbers here, they have 2008, hospitals provided $36 billion worth of unpaid care, mostly for emergency room visits. So this cost of unpaid care adds an average of $1,000 to the average person's premium. So that means you and I who have health insurance,
mm-hmm.
The hospitals have to pay their bills, so they increase their costs. Our insurance companies have to pay more. So we therefore have to pay more. So reform would provide affordable coverage so people are not forced to use emergency rooms for basic care. So there, I think that's a positive. I'm not sure how I would feel when somebody would force me to do something. I've got that kind of personality. It's like, don't tell me what to do.
Exactly.
But I think we have to take the broader view here.
Mm-hmm.
Two other points, they said that it would reduce the use of ineffective treatments. There's a lot of ineffective therapies, expensive new technology that may not benefit patients. So going back to this wussification and I want it now and I want everything, mm-hmm. Some chemotherapy regimens will give people an extra 3 months of life right. at what cost for quality of life. But, you have to really think about this. But this one stood out for me. It's around eliminating unnecessary tests and procedures. So it says as much as 30% of our annual health care spending, or $700 billion a year, goes toward treatments, tests, and hospitalizations that do nothing for our health. Health reform would replace fees for service with fees for outcome to reduce the number of unnecessary tests and procedures and reward doctors and hospitals for providing efficient, high-quality care. Where I want to go with this is if I present in an emergency room and I say to you, you're an emergency room nurse, I've got some chest pain. Mm-hmm. Right? I've got some maybe burning and discomfort and heaviness. That's going to throw me into a protocol that will require
CAT scans, lab work, EKGs, chest x-rays, EKGs. You're going to get the million-dollar workup.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So by using less than an emergency room, again, based on what's available to you hour-wise, all the articles do take that into consideration. If I go to an urgent care, you have a physician, and they will be able to do an assessment mm-hmm. based on getting more information from you, talking with you, right. finding out,
And that's not to say the emergency room won't do the same thing, but I think we as patients are losing the fact that we're inside our bodies mm-hmm. and we know what we're feeling, and you have to be your own advocate. You have to stay to the doctor who's going to put you into a protocol of treatment because he's trying to rule out things. I mean, chest pain or heart attack symptoms present usually in the same way, but everyone is different.
Right. Women in particular. Yes, and present differently.
And as women, as caregivers, mothers running the household, we tend to ignore the early warning signs.
That's true. That, yes.
So you have to be your own advocate when you're lying on that hospital bed or sitting in that doctor's office. Ask questions. And if you don't know the right questions mm-hmm. to ask your doctor, what is this test going to show you? Mm-hmm. What is this going to do for me? And how will you be able, what are the test results going to interpret for you? What's our next course of action? If this test comes back positive, what does that mean for me in the future?
Right.
Does that mean more medication? Does that mean more tests? What exactly are you going to learn from this test? Is this just a caveat, a test, just so I don't sue you? You have to be your own advocate.
I have two thoughts here. One is an example. Registered nurse.
LPN, exactly, licensed practical nurse. Yeah. We're not doctors.
But I was at just a regular checkup. Mm-hmm. I'm prone to asthma attacks or asthmatic type attacks if I get a very severe cold in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. If I don't, I'm fine. I don't have asthma. But I like to have a rescue inhaler. Mm-hmm. And I've had one, and I looked at it, and it was expired by 3 years. I thought, gee, it's time to get a new one. So I'm at my primary, and he said, well, I want to do an EKG. Now, I understand why he would want to do that, because there are some cardiac side effects in some of these drugs. But I said, I just had one mm-hmm. Less than a year ago. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, I don't want the inhaler. I'll cope with it because I'm not paying I'm not going to have my insurance pay for the EKG. Well, about a minute later, tech comes in, does the EKG. I'm not going to charge you for it because it really doesn't cost. You have they're little
They're portable machines. We have one in an urgent care center.
Yeah. So again, you have to think, you really do have to advocate. You know, right. How necessary was it for me to have that? I knew I didn't need an EKG. I was fine. I'd gone through surgery. So that's...
You are a difficult patient.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
An EKG is a non-invasive test.
Yeah.
It's little stickers that go on different parts of your body, and it reads the electrical waves in your heart. That's a non-invasive test. But a CAT scan, which is a significant amount of radiation.
That's a very good point.
That's an invasive test.
And we have much more exposure to radiation with the number of CAT scans that are being done than the sun. And people really don't get that.
Right. We're going to start seeing the effects stuff of pretty soon.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Unfortunately.
So there's another controversial topic for us. Yeah.
I think the message needs to be, you know, ask questions. You know, you have to live with whatever is coming down the pike, whether it be you're having a heart attack or it's indigestion. Or, you know, all of these other things. Ask questions. That's the biggest message I want to send. Be your own advocate. And when you get information from your doctor, if you don't understand it, don't just say, oh, okay. Mm. Ask more questions. Say, I don't understand that.
Right.
And, you know, having recently gone to my doctor as well for a checkup, she knows I'm a nurse. So she talks to me in the lingo. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because I'm sitting on the opposite side. But I don't want her to talk to me in the lingo. Yeah. I'd rather you talk to me like I'm a patient. Like I don't understand what that test result means. Just explain it to me a little bit better. So I guess I'm a bad patient in that respect. But I do drive her crazy with all my questions because it's me. It's my body.
Yeah. You know, that's very good advice, asking the questions. And speaking of the internet, there are sites. If you Google how to prepare, your visit with the physician, It will walk you through, and you can create and develop a lot of really good questions. Mm-hmm. And when you get to the physician's office, you can say to them, when you get in there, you know, most of them are going to have their head over their desk, in their computers now.
Right.
But ask them, hey, look me in the eye.
Right.
I have some things that I want to talk to you about.
Right.
And be sure you have a pencil and a pen. You need to write it down or have somebody with you who can be your second set of ears.
Exactly. That's a very good point, having a pencil and a pen. When you go to your doctor's office, you should already have a list of things written down. Well, you know, this is what's happening to me. These are the symptoms I'm feeling. So you don't forget.
Yeah.
Because we all get in there and we have, you know, a lot of people have what we call white coat syndrome, where their blood pressure goes up. They're in the doctor's office. Oh my gosh, I'm going to get bad news. Write everything down so that you don't forget.
Right.
And it can be a productive appointment.
You know, another point around, you know, managing your care, you have a chronic condition, might be in the hospital. In fact, something new to me, I haven't worked in the hospital in years, but the whole notion or concept of hospitalists, so that your primary physician doesn't see you in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And now you're discharged with all your medications, you're given prescriptions, and what I've seen happen is that you get this list of medications to take, you get new prescriptions, and it may be a brand name for a drug that you're already taking at home. They'll say, continue your medications, they'll give you a prescription. You go fill it, now you're taking double the dose, because your medication bottle at home has a different name from what was prescribed. So very importantly, when you go to your physician, have a list, precise list of every name on every bottle you're taking, and have them check that.
Right. That's another place where pharmacists will come in.
Oh, that's
if you're going to the same pharmacy, it's very important that you go to the same pharmacy and you develop a relationship with your pharmacist, because they're the ones that are going to catch that.
Yeah. So in terms of the pharmacy, we have a little bit of a little background noise here coming up on the hour, but that's okay. It makes it fun. No, but I really like the suggestion about the pharmacy. It's not going to cost you anything.
Right.
And if they do what we call a medication remediation, they look at the list. In fact, New York State requires the pharmacist to do a lot of education. That's why you're supposed to sign at the desk.
Right.
Okay.
And they have a lot of helpful hints as well that's not necessarily on the medication bottles. You know, like for an antibiotic,
Yeah.
take yogurt. If you like yogurt, have a yogurt every day. That will help cut down on some of the side effects that antibiotics can cause. And I got that
Precisely.
from a pharmacist.
Yeah. And actually, I don't look at mine, obviously, but
You
I do think you do get a piece of paper and instructions for patients. Now,
do.
we do have an issue here around, health literacy, regular educational literacy, and language barriers. You know,
Right.
can people really read that? But there is an online program called Epocrates, and that you can go there and plug in your medications, and it will give you information about this, the general side effects, some of the cautionary items there. So, well, this has been, I think, very informative. I've learned some things myself,
I hope so.
and I hope our listeners have learned a few things. Again, we just want to remind you that if you're having some very, very serious signs and symptoms and you're afraid, don't hesitate to call 911. Don't wait, because we know that if you're treated very quickly for stroke or heart attack, your chances of survival are very high.
Very
So,
high, yes.
yeah. So, again, thank you, Jerry.
Thank you for having me.
And I know that we'll be speaking more
I hope
together
so.
on
That would be
Wellness
lovely.
Watch. We've come up with some great ideas.
Great.
Thank you.